Good evening. This is Bill Deal. Tonight, another in a series of summer specials on WCCO Radio. Programs that recall the moments, the moods, and the music that some of us will never forget. This is the stuff that makes up what we call memories. Tonight, the Class of 69. The top story of 1969 probably was the top event of the century. Perhaps, as some called it, the greatest thing since the resurrection. Incredibly, mankind reached out through deep space and his own ancient dreams and actually set foot upon the moon.
Listen, Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed. It's one small step for man.
In 1969, another long-time dream came true, the dream of Richard Nixon to lead the nation. He was inaugurated in January, and then was to name a new Supreme Court Chief Justice to succeed the retiring Earl Warren. President Nixon picked a former St. Paulite. His name, Warren Burger.
At a time like this, the best thing to say is very little. I am bound to say, of course, that I'm grateful to you, Mr. President, for your gracious expressions of confidence. In a sense, at least, you pay tribute to all of the sitting judges of the federal and state systems in this nomination.
Late on the night of July 18th, Senator Edward Kennedy drove his car off a bridge on Chappaquiddick Island, and his 28-year-old secretary met. Mystery and suspicion surrounded the tragedy, and Kennedy went on the air to plead his case.
There is no truth whatever to the widely circulated suspicions of immoral conduct that have been leveled at my behavior and hers regarding that evening. There has never been a private relationship between us of any kind.
And in 1969, a fad singer calling himself Tiny Tim painted himself as a baseball expert and made a World Series prediction.
I wouldn't be surprised to see, if it's not Washington and the Dodgers, I wouldn't be surprised to see the Dodgers and maybe Minnesota.
It was a year when bus service in the Twin Cities was halted for 25 days when 1,050 transit workers went on strike. The new Northwestern Bank building opened in St. Paul. It was the year that a new freeway, I-94, opened between the Minneapolis and St. Paul business districts, making it possible for motorists to travel that distance in just 12 minutes. Police Detective Charles Stenvig battled City Council President Dan Cohen for the job of mayor of Minneapolis, and Stenvig won in a landslide with more than 60% of the vote. And in 1969, the Minneapolis City Council voted for a feasibility study to weigh the possibility of a domed stadium to be located in downtown Minneapolis. And also in 1969, singer Johnny Cash went to prison. Not for any misdeed, but to make music, to entertain the inmates at San Quentin.
I think I'm gonna name him Bill or George, anything but Sue. I'm going to...
All right, thank you very much.
We choose to go to the moon. We choose to go to the moon. We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things, not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills. Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone, and one we intend to win, and the others too.
President John F. Kennedy spoke those words as his administration and the 1960s began. He had pledged that America would have a man on the moon within the decade. Well, we made it. with only 5 months and 11 days to spare. Astronauts Neil Armstrong, Ed Aldrin, and Mike Collins blasted off from Cape Kennedy, their target, the moon, 240,000 miles away. At the moon, the command ship, with Collins at the controls, undocked the lunar lander called the Eagle, with Armstrong and Aldrin aboard. Tens of thousands on that Sunday afternoon, July 20th, listened to WCCO radio as the two Americans descended toward the moon.
We're go, same type, we're go.
1,400 feet, still looking very good.
540 feet down at 30, and at 15.
60 seconds.
Lights on, picking up some dust.
30 seconds.
Forward to backlight. Okay, engine stop. ACA at a descent.
Auto
descent. Control both auto descent, engine command override off. Engine arm off. 413 is in.
We copy you down, Eagle.
Listen, Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
Roger.
The Eagle had landed. Remember those hours as we all waited to hear what would happen next? What was out there? On the moon, what would be found? And could our astronauts make it safely back to Earth? Well, after cooling down their engines, Armstrong and Aldrin donned spacesuits. Armstrong opened the hatch and led the way down the ladder of the LEM. An incredible saga was unfolding. Houston Space Command observers and the entire world held their breaths. A Houston official spoke.
Okay, Neil, we can see you coming down the ladder now.
Okay, I just checked... Getting back up to that first step, it hasn't collapsed too far, but it's adequate to get back up.
Roger, we copy.
It's a pretty good little jump. I'm at the foot of the ladder. The LEM footbeds are only depressed in the surface about 1 or 2 inches, although the surface appears to be very fine-grained as you get close to it. It's almost like a powder. Ground mass is very fine. I'm going to step off the LEM now. That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. The surface is fine and powdery. I can pick it up loosely with my toe. It does adhere in fine layers, powdered charcoal, to the sole and sides of my boot.
We had done it. America had placed a man on the moon. And then came Aldrin. And now we had two men on the moon. And then Armstrong read the message on a plaque affixed to a portion of the Eagle that would be left on the moon. Even today, that plaque remains on the lunar surface, way out there, 250,000 miles away. We heard Armstrong say...
For those who haven't read the plaque, we'll read the plaque that's on the front landing gear of this LEM. There's two hemispheres, one showing each of the two hemispheres of Earth. Underneath it says, "Dear men from the planet Earth, first set foot upon the moon, July 1969 AD. It came in peace for all mankind. It has the crew members' signatures and the signature of the President of the United States."
And then our moon men set up an American flag, which also still stands in the atmosphereless landscape of the moon. And then, working in the 1/6 Earth gravity of the moon, they gathered rock and soil samples, did assorted tests, and then received the longest, in point of distance, phone call ever made. Again, the Houston Space Command spoke to the astronauts, and then so did President Nixon.
Neil and Buzz, the President of the United States is in his office now and would like to say a few words to you, over.
Hello, Neil and Buzz. Because of what you have done, the heavens have become a part of man's world. And as you talk to us from the Sea of Tranquility, it inspires us to redouble our efforts to bring peace and tranquility to Earth. one priceless moment in the whole history of man, all the people on this earth are truly one. One in their pride in what you have done, and one in our prayers that you will return safely to Earth.
The astronauts climbed back into the Eagle, and the first moonwalk was over. It was 11 minutes after midnight, Minnesota time, very early on the morning of Monday, July 21st. They slept fitfully during an ordered rest period and then prepared for the most dangerous part of their mission, liftoff from the moon. But Armstrong and Aldrin displayed no apprehension.
Roger, our guidance recommendation is pings, and you're cleared for takeoff.
Roger, understand. We're number one on the runway.
Roger.
8, 7, 6, 5, port stage, engine arm ascent, proceed. Shadow, beautiful. 26, 36 feet per second up. 5, for the pitch over. Very smooth. Balance couple off. Very quiet ride.
Soldiers, sailors, and airmen of the Allied Expeditionary Force, you are about to embark upon the great crusade toward which we have striven these many months. The eyes of the world are upon you. The hopes and prayers of liberty-loving people everywhere march with you.
That was the voice of Dwight Eisenhower as he spoke in June of 1944 on D-Day. They called him Ike. He was the leader of Allied forces in Europe during World War II, and then became a two-term president of the United States. On March 28, 1969, Ike died at 78. He had triumphed over a number of serious illnesses dating back to 1955, but he succumbed when his heart simply stopped beating. Eisenhower, a soldier by trade, said that he stood for peace, but peace with honor. He firmly backed his Secretary of State, John Foster Dulles, who several times took the U.S. to the lip of war, said Ike.
Americans, indeed, all free men, remember that in the final choice, a soldier's pact is not so heavy a burden as a prisoner's chains.
Before Ike was buried in his boyhood hometown of Abilene, Kansas, tributes came pouring in from all parts of the globe. Two of them came from former Vice President Hubert Humphrey and from newly inaugurated President Richard Nixon. First, Humphrey.
Here was truly a good man, trusted, loved, and respected. His career as soldier and statesman was a living testimonial to those qualities of faith, courage, and integrity, which are the hallmarks of greatness.
I know Mrs. Eisenhower would permit me to share with you the last word she spoke to him on the day he died. He said, "I've always loved my wife. I've always loved my children. I've always loved my grandchildren. And I have always loved my country." That was Dwight Eisenhower.
According to the opening song in Hair, this was the age of Aquarius, and the Fifth Dimension took that tune and made it their own chart buster in 1969. And in 1969, Warren Burger, a former St. Paulite, was soon to be sworn in as Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court.
At a time like this, the best thing to say is very little. I am bound to say, of course, that I'm grateful to you, Mr. President, for your gracious expressions of confidence. In a sense, at least, you pay tribute to all of the sitting judges of the federal and state systems in this nomination. Men and women who, day in and day out, perform the difficult tasks of the administration of justice. And I hope I can, in a way, share that with all of them tonight.
The time now is 23 minutes before 9 o'clock. In the Twin Cities, it's 70 degrees. This is WCCO, St. Paul, and Minneapolis. And we continue now with our summer special, The Class of 69. As far back as World War II, many young American men shuddered at the mention of the name Louis B. Hershey. The lieutenant general had headed up the nation's selective service, the draft. Hershey had held the post through the Korean War, and in 1969 he was a focal point of anti-Vietnam War protests. In October, Hershey was dismissed by President Nixon, but he took his fate like a good soldier.
I would call your attention to the fact that I'm 16 years beyond what most people in the Army are, and so I don't know many 70-year-olds are still in the civil part of government, so I think I've been pretty lucky, and not only that, I maybe flatter myself, but the very fact that somebody is still willing to know something about what I might think about things, I'd call that if I were given. And it didn't make any difference whether I got promoted or whether I didn't. The President of the United States is running this thing, and the citizens of this country better make up their mind that their loyalty to their president comes first in getting in pitch.
And in 1969, the saga of Teddy and Mary Jo. He was Senator Edward Kennedy of Massachusetts, brother of the assassinated John and Robert Kennedy. She was Mary Jo Kopechne, a secretary on his staff. In mid-July, Kennedy attended a party on Chappaquiddick Island off Martha's Vineyard. The men, all married, were not with their wives. The women at the party, all were single. Sometime during the evening, Kennedy drove off with the 28-year-old Mary Jo. The car plunged off a bridge. Kennedy escaped, but Mary Jo was trapped in the car, and she drowned. Kennedy did not report the accident until 10 hours later. He claimed to have been in a state of shock, though he had been seen in dry clothing after the accident and long before making the report. Amid headlines shouting scandal, Kennedy took to the air. He had just been sentenced to 2 months in prison for leaving the scene of an accident, a sentence that was suspended. Said Kennedy,
"There is no truth, no truth whatever, to the widely circulated suspicions of immoral conduct that have been leveled at my behavior and hers regarding that evening. There has never been a private relationship between us of any kind. I know of nothing in Mary Jo's conduct on that or any other occasion. And the same is true of the other girls at that party that would lend any substance to such ugly speculation about their character. Nor was I driving under the influence of liquor. For me, this will be a difficult decision to make. It has been 7 years since my first election to the Senate. You and I share many memories. Some of them have been glorious. Some have been very sad. The opportunity to work with you and serve Massachusetts has made my life worthwhile. And so I ask you tonight, the people of Massachusetts, to think this through with me. In facing this decision, I seek your advice and opinion. In making it, I seek your prayers. For this is a decision that I will have finally to make on my own."
The voters of Massachusetts returned him to office. But that night, in 1969, still casts a shadow over Ted Kennedy. 1969 also was the year of Woodstock, that mammoth musical gathering in August. And it was the year that the New York Mets won the World Series. Leo Durocher's Cubs had been riding high in August, and he was so confident he left the club to spend a weekend with his new wife and her son. And after that, the Cubs fizzled. Jackie Robinson had these words.
"I think Leo made a very bad mistake when the club was playing well, that he said he had a stomach ache and went to visit his wife. I think this has to have an effect upon a ball club, and I think this is where Leo could have possibly made a serious mistake and could have affected the final outcome of the 69 season."
The Mets were guided by Gil Hodges, who had suffered a heart attack just a year earlier. His wife proved herself a woman first and a baseball fan second when a reporter asked her if winning the World Series was her biggest thrill.
Seeing him walk out of Crawford Long Hospital was the biggest thrill of my life. And then to see this, it's almost, you know, too much for one human being in one year, but we're so grateful.
And a peculiar chap who called himself Tiny Tim was a popular fad singer in 1969. He fancied himself a baseball expert. And when asked in August about the pennant race, Tiny Tim took a swing at predicting and struck out.
Would you care to predict at this point in the season who the pennant winners will be?
The Dodgers, definitely.
Would you like to predict whom the Dodgers will play in the World Series?
I think Washington has to be watched right now. They're sneaking up there. I would say right now that I wouldn't be surprised to see, if it's not Washington and the Dodgers, I wouldn't be surprised to see the Dodgers and maybe Minnesota.
The Class of 69, another WCCO Radio summer special. Technical assistance by Don Haber. Sound coordination by Don Haber. And I compiled and wrote and narrated, and I'm Bill Deal. In just 15 seconds, 9 o'clock. CBS World News is next on Nighttime Neighbor to the Nation, WCCO, Minneapolis and St. Paul.